So we are finishing up this series, and the question that we started out with was, is it possible for two people to fall in love and stay in love forever? And as we look around in our circumstances and our culture, we're tempted to say, no, we don't think that's possible. But in our hearts, we know that it is, because all of us believe that somewhere out there, somewhere, is that special somebody. If we can just become the right person and meet the right person, then we can eventually fall in love and stay in love forever. Not just stay married, but stay in love. And so that thing that first brought us together, that romance that sparked that passion, is it possible that we could maintain that through a whole lifetime? Well, we believe that it is. And so then we said, if you are going to stay in love, that we've got to make love a verb. We've got to do it, right? And so we also talked about this model that we have in Jesus, the way that he loved us. He gave us a new model for how we love each other. And then last week, we talked about that we have to pay attention to our heart. I introduced you to Mr. and Mrs. Mugg. And so I promised our team that I would not get beads all over the floor this week, so we're going to be very careful. But I brought them because I really wanted for them to hear today's message. And so they're going to sit here and watch it today with everybody else. And so if you weren't here last week, then you can go back onto YouTube and you can watch the message with the mugs from last week. That was fun. Because we discovered last week that all the stuff that is in us, that when we get bumped, it comes out. And we tend to get bumped the hardest in romantic relationships. And part of staying in love is learning to determine what's in me that I brought into this relationship and what you have brought into the relationship, and how do we work through all of that. Okay? So today, I want to talk about a decision that everybody who's in love makes on a constant basis. In fact, you may make this decision on a daily basis. It's kind of a fill-in-the-blank choice, and it is a decision that we're not aware that we're making. And so today, I'm going to kind of create a word picture for you and sort of a visual aid to help you see and maybe catch yourself when you're making this choice, okay? But everybody that is in love makes this choice or this kind of choice almost every single day. And the habit that you have and the way that you approach this choice has a lot to do with if you are able to stay in love. And as we said throughout the series, this is something that you did intuitively when you fell in love. But as time goes by, we kind of fall out of this habit, and consequently, we begin to undermine our own love relationships. And so to start out with, I want to take you to a passage of scripture that you probably have all heard at some point. In fact, you may have heard some of this and you didn't even know it was in the Bible. It's in 1 Corinthians, and we're going to go there in just a second. Most of 1 Corinthians 13 makes sense, and you can read it and you can say, yeah, I like that and I want to work on that. It's the love chapter. Right? But there's this one verse in verse 7, and there's especially one phrase in that verse that whenever we read this phrase, you might think, yeah, I don't know that that's good advice. In fact, it might not even seem real or realistic. You know, I know it's in the Bible and we need to take it seriously, but when you read it by itself, it just seems like it doesn't make sense. And so as we unpack it today, here's what we're going to discover. That within this verse, verse 7, that the Apostle Paul is trying to say one very powerful thing to us. And it's something that people who are in love do naturally all the time. And so we're going to talk about that. But instead of making one statement, he makes four statements. And these statements all go together to communicate this one very, very powerful idea. However, on the surface, it looks like really bad advice. And so let's look at it. In verse 7, here's what he does. He takes this little word, always, and he uses it four different times. And he matches it up with four different words or phrases. And he says four times very rapidly, four different things that all go together to make one specific point. And if you pull any of these out by themselves, they don't make a lot of sense. you know? And, or you could kind of force it to make sense, but Paul is actually pointing out one of the most important habits, one of the most important practices in a love relationship, especially romantic love relationships. And so here's how he says it. In verse 7, it, talking about love in context, it always protects, it always trusts, it always hopes, and always perseveres. Always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. And so in the New American Standard, it says it this way: bears all things, believes everything, believes and hopes all things, and endures all things. Now, when I would read the phrase believes all things or always trusts, you know, I would think, now, wait a minute, like, that kind of makes love blind. You're just, you believes everything? Believes all things? What if there's evidence of the contrary? I'm just supposed to be in a relationship, and I'm just supposed to swallow hook, line, and sinker whatever you say. I just believe whatever you say. And so when you pull that out by itself, it's kind of like, you know what? It sounds kind of like what codependent people do. Right? It's like, isn't that unhealthy that you just, you know, because haven't you talked to somebody and they said, look, you just need to face reality. This is not what you think it is. And when I would look at that phrase, believes all things, or in the NIV where it says always trusts, I would kind of think on the inside, you know, like, I don't know that's a good thing. But the Apostle Paul is communicating an invaluable principle in this whole verse. And he doesn't do it with simply a phrase. He does it with four phrases sandwiched together to make one statement. And so what I want to do for a few minutes is I want to try to unpack what the Apostle Paul is getting at here, okay? And then I'm going to come back to that verse, and I want to read it again later with this new lens that I want to create for us. And so in every relationship at some point along the way, there is a gap between what we expect with expectations and how people behave in every relationship. There's this gap somewhere here. I expected you to do this, but in all actuality, you did that. Does everybody see this? So listen, no elbows here. You can just shake your head. Just take your own personal responsibility. No elbows. So you said you would be here at 4. It's 4:30 and you're not there. You said from now on you would take part and do these chores and help me, and those chores have gone undone. And so at some point in every relationship, especially romantic relationships, there is going to be a gap between what's promised and what we expect, whether it be what you said when we were dating, or maybe in your wedding vows, what you promised, or maybe it's just the mundane things of life where you said you could pick up the kids on Wednesday, but then every Wednesday you call me and you ask me to pick them up. It could be deep, it could be shallow, it could be specific, or it could be general, but in every romantic relationship, at some point there is a gap between what we expect generally based upon promises or an arrangement, or my mama always did, or my daddy always said that the woman is supposed to, or my dad always fixed that, so why should I have to fix that? So there's all these expectations that are there, and at some point there are behaviors, and then there's this gap in between. And so here's the choice that we have to make all the time. And every one of these gaps, we put something. And we either choose to believe the best or we assume the worst. Every single time. We believe the best or we assume the worst. You do one or the other. And that's what we put in the gap every time. And in every relationship, we put something in that gap. And what we put in that gap begins right here in our minds. And eventually it comes out of our mouth or our behavior, right? So there are actually two things that determine what you're going to put here. Number one is what you see, and number two is who you are. What you see, I see that he hasn't shown up yet. That's what I see. And so I've got to decide what to put in here. What you see, and then also who you are. And this is the harder part, right? Because a lot of times we just don't factor this in at all. Remember, We all came into our love relationship with some beads, right? You had some baggage. You had a mama and or a daddy, and they were either great or they weren't so great. But what they did and the relationships that you had in your past have affected and sometimes infected your heart. And you know this if you've been married for very long, right? It doesn't take long for your spouse's response to you to trigger what you've experienced with previous people in your life. It just happens, yeah? What determines what you put here is what you see. Well, they haven't done what they said that they were going to do, but that's not the only thing. The other thing that drives what we put here is who we are and what we've experienced. Your hurt, your pain, your joys, what you saw growing up, what you have experienced in previous relationships, your fear of being abandoned or being on your own, you know, whatever it might be, we bring all that with us. And all of that, both what we see and who we are, impacts which of these we actually put in the middle or here. And so let me ask you this. Do you tend to go negative or do you tend to go positive in your mind? As soon as you get the text, I'm going to be late again. As soon as you get the text, hey, can you pick up the kids? I know it's my day, but as soon as you get the text, I was going to fix dinner, but then my sister called and then we were late. And so could you pick something up on the way home? Where do we go? Where do we naturally go with your spouse? Where does your spouse naturally go with you? Where do we go? Now, here's what I want you to hear. People who stay in love learn to do the positive. People who learn to stay in love, either intuitively or by force of habit, however they get there, they learn and they consistently, regardless of circumstances, they learn to believe the best. And so when you find people who are still crazy in love, you will not find places where there's no gap. Listen, there will always be this gap. But what you will find is that couples who have both decided and learned that to assume not the worst, but believing the best, which means that they are generous in their explanation. They, in their mind, come up with an explanation. We always fill in the gaps, right? And so they are generous with that. And so let me ask you something. Where do you go with this? Where do we go with this naturally, intuitively? Do we quickly go negative or do we just assume the best? See, that's your decision. Now listen, I know you got a story and there's history and everything that's happened with you, but I'm just asking, where do we naturally go with this based upon what we see and what's inside of us? Now, with that in mind, I want to go back to 1 Corinthians and I want to show you this verse again because this is so extraordinarily powerful. It's over 2,000 years old, this scripture, and it may be the key to some of us who have grown so far apart and we think it's hopeless. And or maybe you're against divorce and, you know, and we're gonna grind it out, but it's not fun. And you don't like it when the phone ring is and it's her. And you don't like it when the garage door opens and it's him. And your kids are there and you don't want to mess their life up, so we're just gonna stick it out and it has become this cycle of negativity. But here's what happens. When both of you end up in the negative, it's just a cycle and it feeds on itself and it feeds on itself and it's a downward spiral. And the thing about it is you get to be right almost every time. See there, I told you. In fact, listen, let me dig a little bit. Some of you actually like it when your spouse messes up because it gives you another excuse to be right. See, I told you he wouldn't come through. See there, he's already late. I told my sister, you know, he's going to be late. I told my brother-in-law, your sister-in-law cannot manage money. And I just found another bill that hadn't been paid. You know what? You get into the cycle and you start looking for it. You start celebrating it. You love to discover that they're wrong. And they love to discover that you're wrong. And you think you're winning arguments. And you may win the argument. But you are losing the most important relationship in your life. And it's your choice every single time. It's a choice as to what you put in the gap. Now, let's go back. Let's look at this verse again. 1 Corinthians 13:7. It, love, always protects. What does it protect? Love protects the integrity of the relationship, right? So, see, I'm not looking for an opportunity to put something in the negative column. I'm trying to protect this relationship. I'm looking for a way to put something in the positive column. I'm going to protect this relationship. I am looking for a way to keep love alive. Always trusts. It looks for a generous explanation, a generous always trust. It believes all things and always hopes. That is, that hopefully there's a good explanation. Hopefully this is something I don't know. Hopefully you didn't mean to. Hopefully I'm not going to give up hope until proven otherwise. Always perseveres. Always looks for the good. So how are we doing on this? Where do we naturally go in our relationships? Have you and your spouse gotten into a cycle? Maybe he's good at this and you're bad at that. Maybe he cuts you slack all the time. And, well, of course he does. I'm like pretty much perfect, you know? And so, but man, if he messes up, if he's 5 minutes late or there's one unaccounted for dollar, you know, or he changed his mind and there's a change of plan, you're just like, oh, well, see, I knew it. Or maybe she's great and you're the one that goes negative. You know, but where do we go with this is the question. Now, here's what I want you to hear. And this is important. When you choose to go to the worst, every time you choose to go negative, even when there's history to back it up, you have contributed to the demise of your relationship. You are a participant in the failure of your relationship. No, wait a minute, Micah. Wait a minute. Now, listen, I understand you got a story, there's history, what they've done in the past, but just listen to me real quick. Every time, even when it seems to be justified, even when there is a history, every time you go negative mentally and it gets expressed in your attitude and in your tone and in your response, your text, your email, the fact that you're not there when she gets home or he's not there when you get home, and it's, there's no dinner ready because they were late, and so you put it all back in the refrigerator and you're sitting and you're scowling watching TV when they get home, and you listen, you're right. It goes both ways in all relationships. But every time you go here, you contribute to the demise of your love relationship. Even when it's justified, you become a participant. Now, listen, let me tell you something about the person that you love. The last thing, no matter who they are, the last thing that they want to do is to disappoint you. It's true about you. It's true about them as well. I don't care how bad the relationship is. I don't care what the history is. The last thing that they want to do is for you to feel disappointed at their behavior and their response and their performance. I don't care who you are. Nobody wants to disappoint the person that they're in a relationship with. And let me tell you what happens. When you go negative, what it communicates is this. No matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, you will never measure up. And one of the most powerful things that you can do when there's a gap is to communicate you have not disappointed, is to fill that gap with believing the best. Because when you choose to believe the best, even when there is a pattern of a person not being everything that you think that they should be, when you choose to believe the best and you choose to communicate that to them, here's what happens. It creates margin in the relationship. And a healthy person responds to that margin and begins to move in your direction. If you have consistently done this, they are afraid of you. If you have consistently been negative, they dread the email, the text, the response. And so when they are running late and they have a really good reason, they're scared of what you're going to do. And they put off making that phone call or sending that text because they don't want to disappoint you. They don't want to be made to feel like they can't measure up. Nobody wants to feel that way, right? So that's why when we do this by choice, and even when there's a gap, we create margin. And what you communicate is this: I trust you. And even before I hear your explanation, I trust you. Even before I hear the circumstances, I trust you. See, trust in a relationship means I accept you, and acceptance means that you have not disappointed me, you are not disappointing to me, and so here's how it sounds in real life. Honey, I'm gonna be running late again. That's okay, you just take your time, I'll be here waiting. What have you done with my husband? Who stole my wife? What in the world? And so all of a sudden you have created this margin. Honey, I forgot to pay this bill. And instead of, aha, I knew you'd forget, you always forget, because I get to be right again, right? No, it's okay. We'll figure it out. You've been busy. I make mistakes too. Margin, margin, margin. Well, but I know you're disappointed. No. Margin, margin, margin. Move toward me. Come my way. There is a gap. But instead of using that gap to make a point and driving you further from me, I'm going to use that gap to leverage the love, and I'm going to bring you closer to me. The more gaps there are, the more opportunities that I have to say I love you. And so it's not about, listen, I endure all things, I bear all things, I believe all things, preserves all things. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have difficult conversations. I'm not suggesting that you don't confront the realities of the relationship. What I'm saying is this, is that after those conversations, when everybody has had their say and everybody's tried to work it out, even when you're mad, that the next time that there's a gap, you still have a choice to go negative or positive. And you will, if you'll choose to believe the best as opposed to the worst, then listen, relationships that last and relationships that thrive are where people choose to believe the best. So let me tell you about your spouse's heart for just a second. Your spouse's heart, your partner's heart, is just like your heart. Our hearts are drawn toward environments of acceptance. God made us that way. And see, this is an opportunity for you to draw your partner's heart into your direction, just like they did when you first met. You may come home, she may come home. But listen, if it's not an environment of where they measure up, their heart doesn't come home with them, even if they come home, no matter how bad they want to. If it's, I'm coming home and I know I'm going to be raked over the coals because I forgot this, or I forgot to pick up that, or I've got this situation going on. If I know I'm going to come into a conversation where what's communicated to me is that you disappointed me again, you didn't measure up, you need to try harder next time. I'm right. Listen, I may be there with my body, but I'm not going to be there with my heart. Because my heart is drawn, and your heart is drawn, toward environments and relationships of acceptance. And every time that there's a gap, we make a decision. Will I accept them or will I reject them? Every single time. It's our decision. And couples that stay together forever have learned that there are going to be gaps. It's not a question of if there will be. The only question is, what are we going to put in the gap? And will I be willing to endure all things, to hope all things, believe all things, bear all things? Am I willing to place in that gap, I trust you, until there's absolutely no other way for me to trust you? I am hoping, I am hopeful that there is a good reason, a good explanation, and I'm not going to reject you. And I'm not going to criticize you, and I'm not going to chastise you until it's absolutely that we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is no excuse. And then we're going to have a tough conversation. But when that conversation is over, I choose to put trust right there in the middle, in the gap. And so how are we doing on this? How are we doing this? And so Jesus summed it up like this. Luke 6 and verse 31, this is Jesus' words. He said, do unto others as you would have them do to you. So most of us learned it this way: learn to do to others as they have done to you. Right? But let me ask you this. How's that working for you? Is that bettering your relationship? Do unto others as they do unto you? Well, but they don't deserve it. Well, yeah, but is this bringing about positive change in your relationship? Well, I know you're right every time, but does it work? What if we decided to do to them what we would like for them to do for us? What if we discounted everything else in the Bible and all of Christianity, and we just said, we're just going to do this one thing? I don't suggest we do that, but what if? What if you just said, hey, listen, I'm going to do for them or for her what I would like for them to do for me? Give me the benefit of the doubt. For some of us, this could be totally revolutionary in our relationships. It could be a game changer. But I'm telling you that it begins right as soon as you get that phone call, as soon as you get home and the trash can's still out, you're looking through the mail and you realize that there's an overdue bill, like she promised and she didn't do it, and you know what, he said he would, that's where it begins. That's when some of you are going to make that choice on the way home today. Some of you are going to have to make that choice tomorrow morning. And it's your choice. Am I going to come up with a generous expectation or an explanation and assume the best? Or the worst? But there's something else that makes this even more important. And this is very important. And I said it earlier. There is nothing that will speak to this culture and our communities louder than our marriages. There would be no greater evangelism strategy in our country for the message of Jesus and that God is their Father than our marriage relationships. He said that they would know us by our love for each other, and our marriage relationship is the antithesis of all of that. And if there's ever been a trend that our culture would like to buck and our culture would like to change, and a question that unbelieving people would like to answer, it's how do you fall in love and stay in love forever? Because it's universal. Everybody wants it. And so we as believers should be able to model this, not because we're better than everybody else, but because we are so aware of the fact that we're not better. We were sinners who have been forgiven, and we're learning to extend that forgiveness that was given to us and that trust that was given to us to the person we want to spend the rest of our life with. Our greatest opportunity for impacting culture is not just going to church. It's learning to fall in love and stay in love and love each other the same way that our Heavenly Father loved us. And it begins when we understand that God made love a verb when he sent his son to die for us. It begins by knowing that not only did he send his son to die for us, but he modeled what unconditional love is all about. As Jesus submitted himself to us on a cross, we've been invited to submit to one another in love. And then it continues by that learning that we've got junk in our heart and we've got to learn to guard our heart and monitor it. And it continues as we learn to make this decision every single day that we've got to fill the gap with faith and with trust and not suspicion and not with hostility. My goal is not to make points and win arguments. My goal is to fall in love and to stay in love forever. And as we learn to do that, maybe God would use us to raise up a generation of people who understand that God wants to use love in a whole different way. And maybe God would use us to impact our culture in our country as people who should begin to ask, how is it that you've been able to stay in love? The people ask, how is it that you've been able to get through all of those difficult times? And we're able to say, it's not because we're great, but it's because of our Heavenly Father and what he has done in us through his son, Jesus. If you're not in love, I hope you fall in love. And I hope you fall in deep. And I hope you stay in love forever.